Hello, everyone. I'm John Atack, and I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Bandy Lee. Hi, Bandy.
Hi, John.
And today, I mean, you are an eminent person, and I'm really a huge fan of the work you've done and continue to do. And today, we're moving on from the dangerous, and it continues to be a dangerous case of Donald Trump, which you edited some years ago to worldwide acclaim, quite rightly, and bless you for it. But now you're concerned with the situation in the family courts in the United States. And I've read a piece which we'll link in the description below, which made me very concerned as well. So tell us something about that and what's happening there.
Yes, many people have compared my speaking up about the dangers of Donald Trump, which brought on the book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess the President in 2017. And right now I am looking to publish The Dangerous Case of Family Courts. Essentially, what is rather unknown about family courts is that they cause a tremendous amount of damage and difficulty on the part of children by essentially operating as, well, I call it the greatest human rights violation on US soil,
No.
which is occurring because it's essentially functioning as a center of human trafficking, child sex trafficking, and I have even called it genocide. But let me explain a little further, because for those who are unfamiliar with the topic, think, well, family courts, how can courts be engaged in such terrible, harmful operations? But family courts are actually quite distinct from the rest of the judicial system.
Yes.
The two characteristics that make it so are lack of accountability and lack of transparency. So there's essentially no oversight, no check and balance in the family courts because the judge has almost unlimited discretion. Every court has discretion, but
Of
in
course.
family court, it's almost unlimited. It was initially made that way so that judges could use it for benevolence to respond to the sensitive situation of the family or the child. But the way it has been used is indeed, according to James Spinak, who wrote The End of Family Court, which came out last year. She wrote it from a different angle of family courts, but she essentially said that in the 120-year history of family courts, the extra judicial discretion that's been granted has been used more for malevolence than for benevolence. And so we're seeing the culmination of decades of family courts having no accountability, no oversight. The judge acts as an autocratic actor in their own court, and there's self-imposed secrecy. So just about all family courts have seals on their court records,
Yes.
and they issue gag orders. They say it's for the protection of privacy of the children, and initially it was supposed to be just for the graphic details of abuse, especially sexual abuse, for example. But judges can blanket seal all their records and
Yes.
even extend the seal against litigants. So you have a system where most of the judicial system is beholden to the law and has set procedure in place. Family courts are not beholden to the law and create their own procedure, and they almost always violate rules of evidence, due process, simply go by what the judge wishes. And if lawyers were to try to defend their client against the judge's wishes, they could be disbarred, and disbarment is regular. The litigant who, so essentially, all of this is happening because trafficking children, abused children to their abusers is an extremely profitable business. And this is what's happening in the family courts. As you can imagine, family courts that deal with divorce, custody issues, will encounter child abuse a great deal. Child abuse is about, well, a quarter of children are physically abused to the point where they have marks on their body. One in five are sexually abused to the point where it affects their mental and physical health. And yet family courts nominally pretend that abuse does not exist, but in fact, I have seen they recognize very well where abuse exists, but they send the abused child to the abuser at the rate of about 58,000, at a conservative estimate of 58,000 children per year in the United States. And it's been documented that one in six, well, a child murder occurs in the context of family court every 6 days. So there are at least 1,000 documented deaths that are directly connected to family court so far, and it's the best kept secret that's maintained by the abuse of authority and use of gag orders and court seals.
You make comparison to George Orwell's comments in 1984 about doublethink and newspeak. I must say that the author who came to mind for me was Franz Kafka, that we have a situation where the public, I had no idea about this. I'm not a US citizen, I'm domiciled in the UK, but nonetheless, that a scandal of such immense proportions is taking place, all veiled under the, you know, the authority of the judiciary, which is acting in a tyrannical fashion.
Absolutely.
You in the piece that you wrote, you talk about Richard Gardner. Would you like to tell us a little about his effect upon the situation
Yes.
before his suicide?
He was a child psychiatrist whose misogynist and pro-pedophilia ideas were blatant. Well, he tried to push his theories that never got accepted by any diagnostic system. There are major health associations that denounced him. Last year, recently, the United Nations denounced him because this has actually grown from being a US problem to a global problem. In fact, the UK is one of the more progressive nations in terms of forcing the courts to open up. So, early on last year, they mandated that courts open up to reporters and scientists. It's remarkable that courts have remained closed, even to reporters who would not report the identities of those involved, or researchers who would simply like to gather data without identifiers. They were closed even to that, and it took a legal legislation, a legislative mandate for the UK courts to open.
I mean,
And
Gardner put forward the view that only 1 in 2 million children is abused in any way, and
exactly, that's
whereas
what
1 in 5
Richard
is
Gardner
close to two.
was promoting. So let me go back to Gardner then. I stated in my essay that 1984 was here, and it did start at that time in the family courts because it was in the 1980s when women were gaining more independence, children were gaining more protection from abuse because of awareness campaigns. And he called sexual abuse awareness campaigns a national hysteria, stating that only 1 in 2 million children are sexually abused, whereas the latest very extensive CDC study, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention study, showed that 1 in 5 are in fact sexually abused. So he was actually quite aware. He was a child psychiatrist, but he used his knowledge of child psychology and responses to trauma to twist it around and say that child abuse does not exist or rarely, if ever, occurs. It's the vindictive mother who is making things up, who is lying and coaching the child to report abuse so as to alienate the usually the abusive father. And so he called this the parental alienation syndrome. It was, as I said, rejected by all the diagnostic systems and has never been had any role in the psychiatric or psychological literature. But family courts grabbed onto him because he was someone who told them, who gave them a way to take the child from the protective parent and essentially say that the he advocated that if abuse were reported, to take the child from the what we call protective parent, because the parent who's protecting the child ends up being the only protector of the child against this mammoth of a court system and their abuser, who's usually also a domestic violence offender. When they're abusing the child, they've often been abused their spouse as well. And when the spouse is trying to leave the relationship or for some other reason, the abuser wants to involve the court to essentially hire it as an extension of their abuse, they can do so through family court. This is what is unknown in the outside world, because a lot of fathers' rights groups, which I call abusers groups, because they don't protect loving fathers, they only protect the abusers, even when the mother is an abuser. So fathers' rights groups are kind of an arm of the family court that spreads a lot of propaganda, spreads misinformation stating that women or mothers get custody most of the time, or if they or they use abuse allegations to gain an advantage in family court, or that shared parenting is the best solution for the child. It may be so in such certain situations, but in abusive situations, the shared parenting quickly turns into sole custody by the abuser. And so by forcing shared custody in all circumstances, especially abusive circumstances, it turns out to be sole custody for the abuser. So what's been happening all around the country and all around the globe, it turns out, it's spread through all regions very rapidly. And this is very alarming because it's such a lucrative trade. Within the U.S., it's thought to bring in $50 to $175 billion per year to transfer the child from the loving parent to the abusive parent. And it happens immediately. So whenever there's an abuse allegation, it's almost like a playbook and a blueprint where there's an abuse allegation in family court. And when there's a custody dispute, it's overwhelmingly a child abuse case. And so whenever there's a custody dispute and there's an abuse allegation, immediately the child is taken from the loving parent, who's usually the child's primary caregiver, and given to the abuser. And so they're separated from their primary parent for all their lives. And if you, an ordinary person can imagine, this is the worst trauma for possible for a child to be separated from their parent, no matter what age. Infants, nursing infants have been separated from their primary parent to be given to their abuser.
I mean, there was a situation in the UK, and it, you know, I can't remember the details of it because it was some time ago, but there was a professor here who was acting as an expert. And indeed, after he was sent to prison, and I think this was back in the early 90s, after he was sent to prison for having sexual images of children, the Open University continued to broadcast lectures he'd given on childcare. And it's difficult to accept, but it's important to accept that authoritative systems, and we need to have authoritative systems, we need to have decisions made in cases, that those systems can become authoritarian. You've,
yes,
in your piece, talk about pretty much a brainwashing program that follows on to Liu's program under Mao in China, and you know, passed into the West via the Unification Church and in the Moonies. But you also talk about reunification camps, and there's an awful Orwellian sound to that, knowing that the Unification Church brought these techniques out into the West. And so, yeah.
Yes, it began with Richard Gardner. You mentioned his suicide. Well, he, until 2003, when he committed very graphic suicide, overdose.
23 stab wounds.
Slitting
yeah.
his throat and stabbing himself 23 times with a steak knife. It kind of shows you the emotional disturbance he was carrying all these years. But family court loved him. So for almost three decades, he was the darling of the family courts. Mm. He was expert witness for 400 cases. He couldn't publish any of his articles or books in with legitimate outlets, and no scientific journal would accept his articles. So he formed his own company to publish something like 400 articles and 40 books. And he ended up being extremely influential in family courts, even though he's unknown outside of the courts and none of his theories count anywhere else. Mm. In family courts, his theory dominates. Mm. And family courts are very Kafkaesque. In fact, there's a series of articles that I wrote calling it the Kafkaesque court.
There we go.
I also call it an alternative court, mm-hmm. where in most courts where the perpetrator is prosecuted and the victim is protected, in family court, the perpetrator is exonerated and the victim is made into a perpetrator, mm-hmm. and often ends up in jail, otherwise institutionalized in hospitals or placed as a ward of the state. You would wonder how this is even possible. Usually these are healthy, entirely fit, often excellent parents, because imagine you have the abuser and you have the protective parent. Who would be the healthier parent? And often this is occurring because of the pathology of the abuser. That's why when you hear about child murders by parent, murder suicides, or other deaths that are caused in the context of custody battles, it's usually conditions that have been created by family courts. I've calculated that approximately 25% of murders by parent could be reduced if family courts were eliminated. So it kind of explains the figures of 58,000 children being sent to their abuse, which means a life sentence of torture, if not rape, battery, and murder.
And so about 15,000 of those children would have survived had it not been for the family courts. About a quarter of those children would still be alive. And I mean, this is an incredibly alarming situation.
It's incredibly alarming.
What can we do about it? How can we change this situation? What ideas do you have? But obviously, knowing about it is the first and most important thing, because we can do nothing until we're properly informed. But how can people watching this video do something about it? Is there anywhere that they can go? Is there anything they can do that would be helpful?
Yes, absolutely. Public awareness makes all the difference. Before I learned about family courts, which was just a little short of 3 years ago, I had a whole career, a two-decade career of being an expert witness in courts, mostly criminal court, but some civil court. I never heard about or was called to be an expert in family court, and it became very obvious. They have their own pool of experts, so-called experts, who are usually extremely unqualified, poorly trained. I've seen people with a non-mental health master's degree pose as custody experts and charge 20 times my rate because they're essentially producing fraudulent reports that along the lines of Gardner's theory, which is anti-scientific, anti-psychiatric, anti-medical. No developmental theory would go by things that he claimed. In fact, the US Health and Human Services did a survey that showed that false reports of abuse occur at 0.1%. And they're counting pretty much all reports as
One in a thousand, yeah.
yes. And it's also vastly underreported. Well, before I became acquainted with family courts, I was involved in prison reform. And another system that has had enormous abuses because of lack of accountability and lack of transparency.
Yes.
Things happen in secret behind concrete walls. And so I've known gladiator fights, correction officers driven, gang rapes. Murders with impunity. All these things were happening behind prison doors.
Yes.
And I would alert that the same is happening. The same gruesome violence and murders are happening behind the closed doors of family courts, except it's worse because the victims are innocent children who haven't done anything to deserve the life sentence and death sentences they are subject to. And I mentioned family court practice as a form of human trafficking. Family courts are also closely connected with child sex trafficking, actual
Yes.
child sex rings, gangs that operate up and down the coasts of the United States, I'm told, waiting for children who are handed to their abusers through the family courts because the abusers, unlike the protective parent, don't really care about the safety of the children, or
No.
they often do this for money because, in addition to taking the children, they can demand child support instead of paying it. They can demand it at astronomical figures because family court is essentially a hired hand. And so they demand child support, they demand legal fees, they demand the house, they refuse to pay any alimony. And so it happens a lot in rich households. The poorer families and minority groups have more of another problem, which is the foster care system, which
Yes.
benefits greatly from taking the children from fit or unfit parents. As the more children they take, the more federal money flows. From rich families, the more the abusers take these children, the more money flows into the family courts. What a custody situation that could have resolved within a couple of days extends for months, years, and decades. I've heard of cases that have gone on for 15 years.
It's quite typical in England to this day for a custody action to take 2 years.
Yes.
And really, in
Whereas if
looking
it had gone to criminal court, the perpetrator would be found in a 2-day trial, and it would be very obvious. But family courts are involved in obfuscating the evidence. First of all, they take the child from the protective parents so that no more abuse could be reported. And they place them in reunification camps, that are unproven programs. They essentially imprison the child with the abuser for several days. They remove all contact from the loving parent or all the social supports of the child, which makes the abuse all the more traumatic. Because even in the midst of abuse, the mitigating factor are the other primary supports in their lives. And so all this is removed. It's actually a horrific system of
Yes.
maximizing harm and torture, which manifests in their immediate breakdown. They often become acutely suicidal. They have developed panic disorders. There are reports of children who were they were going through this program. They're usually shipped out of state, sometimes taken by transport agents who really act like thugs who just manhandle these children because they're often kicking and screaming, wishing not to go to their abuser, which is a protective mechanism on the part of the children. They don't wish to be harmed, but they are either forced by these thug-like transport agents or muscle men or taken by the police because it's a court order. And forced into these programs where they're incarcerated with their abusive parent for several days. And for I've been told 4-day programs cost $25,000 to $35,000. And it's really a racketeering program because no licensing agency has approved any of these so-called therapeutic programs. They pretend to be therapeutic and use loopholes such as claiming themselves to be an educational program. And some were run by unlicensed professionals, so people who have lost their license. So they're not even subject to a licensing board.
So, I mean, if it was somebody other than you telling me these things, Bandy, I wouldn't believe it because it is so incredible. But knowing what a remarkable reputation you have and the work that you've done over the years, and you're one of the world's leading experts on violence, as you say, you've worked with prisons to try and bring about reform into the appalling prison system in the United States, where we have more prisoners per head of population than any other country in the world. Indeed, this country has about 80,000 prisoners out of a population of about 65 million. There was a point of just a few years ago where California exported 85,000 prisoners. So we have this terrible situation. The system is not working. And what we're seeing is, you know, the comparison I would make is actually to Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, because we're sat there being given our soma through the internet and Prozac and what have you, and disregarding these urgent problems. So we need further investigation, further exposure of this, but we need to demand reform of this system and demand oversight. There seems to be, you know, whenever a system closes, you know, where the police have nobody looking at, you know, ensuring that they are honest, legal, decent, and truthful, then things will go wrong. There will be cover-ups and the behavior, the corrupt behavior. I strenuously believe that corruption is the worst human problem, that until we have legal systems where corruption cannot occur and where, which means having oversight. So you have somebody, you know, as was suggested in the dangerous case of Donald Trump, and certainly has been my idea for many years, you should not be a politician, certainly not a president, unless you are mentally stable. You know,
That's right.
I mean, I was interested. Nasir Gaymi, of course, eminent and highly brilliant and articulate man who contributed to the dangerous case of Donald Trump, has written a bizarre book suggesting that mad people make the best leaders in times of crisis. And I could not disagree more. I don't think that William Tecumseh Sherman was a great leader. And I think much that's wrong with the North-South divide in the US now comes down to what he did. And of course, his genocide of the Plains Indians afterwards. So I have some disagreement about that aspect of his work. But it shows that even an articulate and brilliant man, and there's no doubt that Gamey is both articulate and brilliant, can be misled. And I believe that we need sane leaders. I believe that rational people make the most rational decisions. And in this case, there should be petitions raised. You know, that's one of the good things about the internet, that we can, hundreds of thousands of us, protest about something. In this country, I think once you have 100,000 signatures, the parliament has to consider what's been said. I don't know what the situation is in state and federal legislatures.
That's actually an enlightened system. I don't think we have any threshold.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? And I mean, we sit and watch the TV and watch things like Succession and Billions and these wonderful dramas, which are very penetrative of the functioning of society. And we sit back and say, oh, well, 'twas ever thus. You know, we've just got to put up with somehow. And that is absolutely not true. It is possible to cause change and reform, as occurred in the prison system in the 19th century, as occurred in the medical system. Because people like Florence Nightingale who said, how can we do this? People like Charles Dickens, who exposed the horrors, or the famous muckraking journalists, as Theodore Roosevelt called them, who exposed these problems. We no longer send four-year-olds up chimneys to clean them. We no longer send four-year-olds down mines to work as pit ponies. It is possible to change the system, but it's horrifying to realise that these abuses, which you outlined so eloquently, are a part of the wealthiest nation in the world, the place that is considered the beacon of democracy by many other places. I personally view it as the beacon of plutocracy, but, you know, because it's $6 billion now to become president. It's not a democracy anymore. But is there anything you'd like to add before we close?
Well, I think you're absolutely right in that it is 1984. It is Kafka's trial. It is
Brave New World.
Brave New Reality. I often say that corruption has allowed for this upside down world to flourish in different pockets. And now we've seen it burst into the national scene to the point where we're facing an existential threat to American democracy and to the survival of humankind by the election of this year.
And we're seeing a generation blighted. It's so unnecessary. I mean, I look at peculiar excesses like spending $1 million on the invasion of Iraq to destroy the infrastructure there, to create a lopsided democracy which represents only Shiite Muslims and no Sunni Muslims, who are 40% of the population. At the same time that 20 to 25% of American citizens are living below the poverty line, with a military of about 1 million people now, if you include all the civilians, all of this amount of money being poured into this and to the devastation of humanity, you know, while we are devastating our environment. I mean, people talk about global warming, and I don't think those words are strong enough. I don't think that people understand that it's environmental devastation that we are witnessing. And for me, what's important, so many of my friends and colleagues, when I talk to them privately, they've lost hope. They really believe that we're just sliding down the hill into hell, and that's all there is to it. I really don't believe that. I think that because of the work of people such as yourself, and say Robert J. Lifton, who contributed to The Dangerous Case, a man who explained a view of humanity, a startling and chilling view of humanity. But nonetheless, I believe that such people, many of them mental health professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, social psychiatrists, like our mutual friend Stephen Moffat, have contributed tools. And we are in a situation where we could remedy these problems, but we can only remedy them if we do something about it. So I would urge anybody watching to write to your political representative, to launch a petition, to do something to to make a change and be part of the change that you advocate.
Yes, absolutely. And people visit my Twitter, which is BandyXLee number one. So BandyXLee one. I will be making announcements as to what people can do, events that are coming up, and the articles that I publish. When I first came out speaking about the dangerous unfitness of Donald Trump, people considered it hyperbolic and did not know why I was coming out stating these things. Now, 7 years later, there's been an article out saying that I've been vindicated. The exact severity and time course that we predicted, but we saw it many years ahead of time using our expertise and decades of psychiatric knowledge and clinical experience. It has helped us to predict and recommend methods for prevention. Of course, none of those were carried out. Even our prescription for survival that came out at the onset of the COVID pandemic in March of 2020 in the US, it had our recommendations been followed, hundreds of thousands of American lives would have been saved. So I'm basically stating that family courts are the same. People now know me as a truth teller, and so I hope people will take to heart the warnings I'm stating about family courts, that this is an epidemic, a hidden epidemic, that is compromising our ability to be a democracy. It is so widespread, and violence begets more violence.
Always.
And the US, that has one of the highest child abuse rates in the developmental world, the developed world, that we could potentially reduce parent-induced child murders by 24, 25%.
And not pass this problem on to the next generation by
Exactly.
creating a situation where children have appalling childhoods with poor or no attachment to adults, and as adults will therefore have little or no concern for the people around them. We are nurturing sociopathy by doing what we're
Yes.
doing.
Well, we exactly. The result is huge personality disorders, trauma responses, trauma bonding with dangerous leaders, and that's what we're observing nationwide, and that gives rise to a whole host of other problems. What I've been calling Trump contagion or shared psychosis, or our death spiral, which we've entered into,
It's
that we
almost
can
the
still pull
Thanatos of.
ourselves out of if we apply the correct interventions. And I'm also writing about that in Substack, and will soon be publishing my book, Trump Contagion, through Substack, so
Excellent.
people can read about that. But going back to family courts, I've also called this a genocide because it meets the definition. Why one does not have to eliminate all members of a certain group, but the group that is targeted and decimated, and I tell you decimated, taking their children would seem enough, but along with the children, they are given enormous financial burdens, such as child support that is unaffordable. They are crushed with penalties. As I said, the abuser is often rewarded everything for warehousing the children and accusing their victim of being the actual perpetrator, alienator. And so the victim, who's usually already a victim of domestic violence, not only loses their children, loses their assets, financial assets, their profession. Many are actually, I've encountered Ivy graduated medical professionals who have got had their professions, all pr professional license and credentials, all destroyed. Their reputation is ruined. They often become homeless. There are mothers who own $2 million homes and lost all their homes by the time they're done with family court, and often, as I said, end up in prison. So I believe there's a reason for the total destruction and annihilation of the protective parent, because they would, if they had the financial means, they would fight back. They could go into another court and expose what the family court has done. They could become whistleblowers. And so their method has been total destruction, to the point where there's either many of them commit suicide, many of them develop stress related illnesses. This is what the British courts revealed. The reporting on British family courts exposed a huge number of deaths of mothers because of heart attacks, broken heart syndrome, some suicide, sometimes by homicide. The emboldened abuser feels entitled to be even the target, the abused under court protection, and develop cancer, other illnesses that cause their deaths. So that came out. Another fact that came out was that not only is the abuser more likely to get custody of the child, convicted sex offenders, convicted murderers. So you murder the sibling, but you still get sole custody of the other remaining child.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
It's appalling, but this is the extremity with which it is occurring. And you see the business, the child trafficking business that also involves child sex rings, which once a child, I even at times call it modern day slavery,
Of course.
where the child can be sold again and again. And child pornography production. These are extremely lucrative trades. So, in order to protect this trade that is going on inside of family courts, you also have to eliminate witnesses. So there's a genocide going on of a social group, not an ethnic group. The more modernized definition of genocide also includes social and political groups, because that group was excluded in order to enlist the Soviet Union, which was a signatory at the time. But many scholars have disputed that, because there's no reason to exclude social and political groups. So, which is the social group? It's the women and children who allege abuse in family court. That gives them the signal to target this group, because you control what is evidence, you control what the verdicts will be. And fix who's the perpetrator and who's the victim. And since you have that power in family court, you simply sell that reverse verdict to the abuser. And so many abusive fathers are also rich, and they do money laundering to donate through the fathers' rights groups to that judge, to that judge's campaign. The judge also keeps everyone else, all the court-appointed appointees who are hired when there's any allegation of abuse, to muddy the picture. There's a guardian ad litem, usually a custody evaluator, a parenting mediator, all these players, and supervisor. It's very funny. Supervised visits happen 100% with the safe parent, and almost never with the abusive parent. That's been my experience.
It's a terrible situation, and thank you for so much for bringing it to light. I had no idea,
Right. People, not even other judges. know what's happening in family court. They call the family court the sewer. That's what a legal professional called it. But the judges comment on how tight-knit the family court judges are, so they operate in different spheres than other judges. And family court judges, as I said, have their own pool of experts they draw from. I, as a highly qualified expert, had no chance to get into family court until I insisted since starting 3 years ago. The way I got in, the way I got introduced to family court was the shocking observation of how my sister's divorce unfolded. She went from what seemed like a normal divorce to a sudden total loss of custody by violent police raid on her assigned weekend with the children, and based on a secret meeting between the judge and the abusive husband, which is illegal and unconstitutional.
Of
And for
course.
2.5 years, she has not had 1 minute of visitation, phone call, or even messaging with her children.
Oh,
They
Paula.
were 7 and 9 when they were taken, and now 10 and 12. They were perfectly healthy and happy, thriving prodigy children when they were taken. Since then, one of them missed about half of school. Both of them stopped growing. They've had numerous emergency room visits. Their teeth are declining to the point where they need surgery. All kinds of medical reports and school reports have come out, but all that the family court has done is block the mother's access to those records. The mother had 9 psychiatric evaluations that certified her in excellent mental health, totally fit to parent. Not only that, but had excellent talent and exceptional talent in parenting. They've often commented that because of collateral reports, and she was just famous in that way of being a good parent that other parents and teachers used to seek out to get advice on how to deal with children. And this abusive father, who almost killed both of the children by head injury at different times, every time he had a parenting hour, they would come back with cuts, bruises, a broken bone, bloody shirts, and suicide attempts. None of this
Terrible.
mattered to family court. They, when he got a restraining order for giving his 7-year-old a head injury, that's when family court fixed it so that the children would be forced, police escorted, to visit with him in the middle of a restraining order, and then allowed him to kidnap the children.
How absolutely appalling.
Yes.
Absolutely appalling.
And this, her case is mild compared to some other cases I've seen. The other thing is family courts control child protective services. So in one case, I've seen a child with a positive rape kit, venereal disease, and 4 medical doctors confirming that she was raped. And Child Protective Services said it was still not enough information. The 4-year-old is now under the sole custody of her rapist, and the
It's a
mother
scandal.
doesn't have any access.
Oh, it's an absolute scandal, and
It is a scandal.
we must all of us do whatever we can to change the situation that, so that there is proper oversight, and so that children who are the future are treated properly, and we hopefully leave behind us a better world than the one we
Yes,
came into.
open courts are the bedrock of a democracy, and the fact that these courts are closed. I used to not know the value of juries because, jury selection comes from just random people from the population. Now I realize what happens in the absence of juries because juries are not allowed in family courts.
Absolutely. Well, I can't thank you enough for what you said, and I'll do whatever I can to make this better known. And
Thank you.
Let's talk again in the future to see what progress has been made here, and indeed about your upcoming book when it's available. So thank you very
Thank you
much,
very
Brandy.
much for holding this important discussion.
Thank you so much.
Hi, John here. Thanks for watching. We'd appreciate it very much if you would click like, as well as subscribe, and click the bell for notifications. Every dollar helps, and we welcome new patrons on Patreon, or you can make a one-off payment with any currency through PayPal. Thanks so much.